Well, we're going to be ambitious because they're short ones, so we should be able to do two of them. We'll do reason number 18 and reason number 19. All right, so reason number 18 is dealing with the birth narratives, and reason number 19 is dealing with the names of the disciples. And we're going to be seeing a lot of these types of things where we're trying to, Asher Norman will be trying to point out contradictions in the gospel text to us in order to undermine the credibility of the gospels. And so this is why it was important for us last week to talk about the origin of the gospels and come to a little bit better understanding of where the gospels come from, what the gospels are, and why there would be discrepancies in the gospels and why we could expect discrepancies. So last week, consider last week's lesson a preface to the next several that we're going to be covering. And tonight we'll start with this birth narrative thing. So he says, reason number 18 is that Matthew and Luke's birth narratives are contradictory. One would expect the earliest accounts to have the most information about historical events, not the latter accounts. The lack of birth or infancy narratives in Mark and John, so there is no infancy narrative in Mark or John, and Mark is considered to be the first of the synoptic gospels. In Mark, a lack of infancy narratives in Mark and John, and lack of consistent narratives in Matthew and Luke, raise the question of whether anything concrete was really known about Jesus' birth and childhood. And so now, we're going to go through a list of contradictions. So we understand that what we're doing here, we understand that in Mark, there is no birth narrative. Mark starts around the time of, Mark starts with the preaching of John the Baptist, right? So Matthew and Luke, we remember from last week, Matthew and Luke, synoptic scholars think that Matthew and Luke had Mark in front of them as they were creating their Gospels. But then they also had another source in front of them called Q, which is the material they share in common. But then they also have additional sources that they don't share in common. So this might be, what are these additional sources? They may be written sources. They may be oral traditions that they've picked up and are transmitting from the apostolic community. So what we're alleging here is that there is no birth narrative in Mark. Therefore, Matthew and Luke made theirs up. And the reason that we can prove that they made theirs up is because they disagree. All right. Okay, let's see how much they disagree, because they do. We'll start out here. When Mary conceived, was she married? Luke 1:27 says she was not. Matthew 1:19 says she was. All right, this is not true. So you can just forget about this one. Matthew 1:19 does not say she was married. It refers to Joseph as her husband and him wanting to divorce her. Remember this? But then, if you understand the way that Jewish betrothal works, a betrothal is not a marriage, but a betrothal needs to be... If a betrothal is to be canceled, it requires a legal written divorce.
But he would know that.
And he does, and he points that out, sort of. He brings it up, but he doesn't. I mean, he really does. It's so strange. He brought it up, but he acted like that was even more evidence. Yes.
Indeed.
Right. So he says her husband had in mind to divorce her quietly. All right, so then he says the betrothal mentioned in Luke was the erusin, that's the Hebrew or Aramaic, giving the wife something of value in the presence of witnesses to betroth her. In first century Judaism, the erusin ceremony was about a year before the nisuin ceremony, the marriage. During this year, Jewish couples usually did not cohabitate. although they were legally married. And the laws of adultery fully applied. Correct. Is usually a year in those days, whereas nowadays it's usually about 3 minutes. Really, because that's how we do it now. We do the betrothal just before the wedding, like as a part of the wedding ceremony. So yeah, people had to wait a lot longer then. So this is troubling to me because he poses a question and then answers it himself. Not good legal practice. Number two, Nazareth or Bethlehem? Here's the discrepancy. Luke says that they live in Nazareth. So in Luke, they live in Nazareth, right? Matthew has them in Bethlehem, moving to Nazareth later. Have you noticed this before? All right, well, let's just look at the passages. Luke chapter 1. We can do this rather quickly. So if you look in Luke 1, 27, he says, 26. Now in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city in the Galilee called Nazareth, right? To a virgin. And she's living there, okay? So that's the verse. That's the verse. She's living in Nazareth. She's in Nazareth. And then if you pop over to Luke 2, verse 4, it says, Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and family of David. So, according to Luke, the young couple lives in Nazareth, but they go to Bethlehem. And that's where the birth happens, right? Okay, great. Now, what does Matthew say? In Matthew chapter 1, chapter 2, verse 1, here's what we have. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, the Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem saying, where is he, right? And so where do they find him? In Bethlehem. They're living in Bethlehem, not in Nazareth. And so we don't find them going to Nazareth until
after Egypt.
After Egypt, thank you, yes. So in 2:16, for example, we find that we're still in Nazareth, and then, still in Bethlehem, and then in 2:23, it says that's when he goes to Nazareth. So there's your discrepancy, that Matthew has him living in Nazareth, going up to Bethlehem, and then back to Nazareth, whereas Matthew has them only moving to Nazareth after the return from Egypt. It is not a real problem because you can easily harmonize it. Just a quick harmony would be this, and this is how I would suggest it, but I'm sure there's other ways to do it. I would say that Joseph, and probably Miriam as well, are from Bethlehem originally. Their family is in Bethlehem because they're a Davidic family, and that's Davidic territory. So Bethlehem is Davidic holdings. They move to Nazareth. I even think I know why they would have moved to Nazareth, but we can talk about that some other time. But politics forced the Davidic families out of Bethlehem. They colonize some towns up in the Galilee, one of them being Nazareth. However, they still have property and ties and holdings back in Bethlehem. So they move to Nazareth. They're coming to Bethlehem. At the time of the birth, they're back in Bethlehem. They stay in Bethlehem a little while. They end up heading to Egypt. Maybe they stay in Bethlehem a couple years. It doesn't really matter. But they end up heading to Egypt. After they've been in Egypt for a while, for a year or so, they're going to head back to Bethlehem. They find out about Archelaus, as it says in Matthew, ruling in the place of his father Herod. They decide it's too dangerous in Bethlehem still. And so they go back to Nazareth. So it's like having, you know, two locations that you can operate out of. But that's would be an easy harmony. There's one flaw. And that's reason number five, point number five here, where it says, how long did they remain in Bethlehem? According to Matthew 2:16, they were there possibly a couple years. All right? According to Luke chapter 2, verse 39, it says, when they had performed everything according to the Torah of the Lord, and here we are 40 days after the birth, right? This is 40 days later. After they had performed everything according to the Torah of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own city, Nazareth. So there you have a strong contradiction. Because in Matthew, they are fleeing from Bethlehem to Egypt and then back to Nazareth. In Luke, there is no flight to Egypt. There is only the go up to the temple and then head back to Nazareth. So, yeah, there's a contradiction. Matthew says they go from Bethlehem to Egypt to Nazareth. Okay? Luke has them go from Nazareth to Bethlehem back to Nazareth. And he has them do it in quick succession so that they're heading back to Nazareth 40 days after the birth of the Master. So the contradiction comes, there's no time for them to still be in Bethlehem. The Magi, the slaughter of the innocents, the trip to Egypt, then coming back, then saying, oh, Bethlehem's too hot, we need to go to Nazareth, within that 40-day span.
And where do we get those 40 days?
From Luke. It's the purification. She's going up for her purification. So look, they're obviously different stories. You don't have the Egypt incident in Luke. It's just not there. You know, you have it in Matthew. It's not a problem. Matthew has this tradition about the flight to Egypt, the slaughter of the innocents. Luke does not have that tradition. Are they mutually exclusive? No. This is exactly what we should be doing. You know, we should be sitting and spinning Gemara to reconcile this and coming up with different theories of how this happened and how it comes about. And, you know, when Luke says, then they returned to Nazareth, that certainly can be taken in a broad sense. We could take that in a very broad sense and say, yeah, eventually they returned to Nazareth because his narrative needs them back in Nazareth, because the next thing he's going to tell us about is pilgrimage from Nazareth back to Jerusalem. So, you know, he's got to move the narrative forward. That doesn't mean that he, like, knew that as soon as they left the temple after Miriam's purification, that they said, well, let's get on the donkey and head back for Nazareth. You know, it's just a narrative element. Sometimes we put too much stress. It's not an irreconcilable contradiction.
Witnesses don't necessarily give the same account.
Right. Well, I'm not...
And if they were witnesses.
I don't know. I'm just not alarmed. Okay, discrepancies in the Gospels... I just, heads up, if discrepancies in the Gospels alarm you, this is not going to be good. They just don't alarm me. It's not a worrisome thing for me that Matthew said this and Luke said that. I don't get it. Do you get it? Why it's such a big deal? I don't get it.
Well, you get it if it's a big deal. If you've been told all your life that the Scriptures are inerrant, infallible, and if it's inerrant and infallible, then that means there cannot be anything different in them.
I don't think that's different, though.
I don't know.
A contradiction cannot.
We have lots of real contradictions. We have. I mean, this one, not so much. We don't worry about. This one can be harmonized. But there are dead-on contradictions that are irreconcilable between the Gospels. And, you know, so inerrant, infallible. Well, Matthew's inerrant and infallible, and Luke's inerrant and infallible. But they're both inerrant and infallible in their own respective Gospels. You know, I don't know. I'm not.
Torah, long enough, and you have an understanding of there not being problems. Just like the sages look into the Torah, and they see these things as well. But for people who are not...
Yeah, I understand.
It's going to be very difficult.
So I would sit in Midrash classes. And we would hit these, like, explosions. You know, these explosive moments where it's like, no, that's wrong. No, that's wrong. Wrong. You know, and you'd be like, no. It's okay. It's okay. There's 70 facets to Torah. There's 70 facets to the gem of Torah. You know, and it's like, oh, okay. Well, it's just a different facet. But it's not, I'm picking on Asher Norman just because we're doing his book.
Yeah.
This is the anti-missionary tactic in general.